Hi, this is Julie.
This is Liz.
This is Sheila.
This is Monica.
This is Leanne.
We are the Satellite Sisters.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters to Go.
You are listening to Satellite Sisters. Thanks for being with us today. It is Tuesday, July 28th, 2015. I'm Leanne Dolan, and today I am ringing in from Bend, Oregon, and I'm here with my sister Julie Dolan, who is in the mountain paradise of Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Hi, Jewel.
Hi, Leanne. Well, yes. How's it going in Bend, Oregon?
It's good. I'm going to tell you about our little vacation. We drove up here Saturday. My husband did a masterful job of driving. I can't even tell you. That's a long
That's
haul.
That's your race car husband who,
You know, he's just a very accomplished and focused driver. Let's just leave it at that in case there are any highway patrolmen listening. But, you know, he's very focused. He takes the drive very seriously. So we did the 800 miles very smoothly.
That's okay.
very, very smoothly. And, So we got a lot going on the show. Well, not really, because I'm on vacation, but we have a few news stories. We have some things that fall under the general advice of parenting, from parenting young campers to high school seniors to young adults who return home. Julie, you're very, very concerned about the militarization of artificial intelligence and the robots that are going to turn against us, I understand.
It's not just me, Leanne. A lot of people are worried about killer robots. And it starts with the driverless cars, Leanne, okay? We have to get some positions on what's going to be tolerable and what's not going to be.
Okay. You have a pick? You have a video pick?
I do, Leanne. I do have a recommendation for the Satellite Sisterhood. Yes.
And then,
no,
of course,
no pans this week because it's summertime.
Yeah, just keep it breezy.
I'm going to start being, you know, dumping on shows and books and TV after Labor Day.
Okay, that's cranky. Good idea. Yeah. And then, of course, we have Pole, Dark, and Handsome. We're headlong into the series finale next week. So episode 7 this week set up a lot of dun-dun-dun-duns to be answered next week. That's what I would say.
Dark and stormy, Leanne. That's what I have to say.
Excellent. First, we do need to mention the Satellite Sisters Instagram contest. I know the trio who were on this weekend did cover it. But if you're doing the hashtag Satellite Sisters, Sat Sisters Summer Fun Contest, keep on doing it. I'm enjoying looking at people's summer fun pics. Aren't you, Jewel?
I love it, Leanne. People are having a lot of fun. People are being very original and creative, and there's all kinds of pictures. And I'm glad that nobody's adhering to Liz's rules that it had to be people.
I mean,
some of the top picks are pets, Leanne, but, and food and drinks and just good summer fun.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. The dogs of the Satellite Sisterhood are having an excellent time this summer. I mean, they're doing all kinds of things.
Yes, they are, Leanne.
So if you're not on Instagram, get on it. We're at Sat Sisters. Julie, you also have your own account, which is
at Julie Oldest Sister. Yes. Why do you laugh at that?
Because every time I mention you're the oldest sister, you get mad at me. But it's okay if you call yourself the oldest sister. Is it one of those things?
It was all that was left, Leanne.
Okay.
You know how it is? It's just, I don't know. I just had to create a fresh account, and that's what I came up with.
Okay. All right. And then, and I'm at Leanne Dolan, because that's almost never taken.
Right. Go ahead. You can have all the Leans you want, Leanne.
Yeah. In fact, I get kind of freaked out when I go to register for something, and they'll tell me, Leanne Dolan is taken. That freaks me out. Anyway, that's happening. Of course, we're on Facebook, more people joining the Facebook group, but it's just been fun to do that. And it's a good, easy breezy summer activity. So excellent. But I am in Bend, Oregon, where we talk about it a lot on Satellite Sisters because Liz has a bungalow here and Monica often comes over from Portland. Liz comes up and then we usually make an annual trip, but it's been a couple of years since we've been here with my family. So we drove up Saturday, 800 miles. Did I mention that? I mean, it's every time we get to the 600 mile mark, we always say, I wish Bend was here. You know, it's like 600 miles is no problem.
Mm-hmm.
800 is
how many hours? How many hours, Leanne? Or do you want to disclose that?
Well, we did it under 12 hours this time, door to door under 12. And as my son said, and we would have done it in 11 and a half if mom wasn't in the car. So, you know, I make an extra stop or two. So anyway, and I thought we were going to listen to some audiobooks on the way up, but my husband was concentrating so hard on the drive. He's like, I just can only listen to music. He couldn't follow a story because I had downloaded that Red Sparrow that you.
Oh, yes.
Right. I thought that would be a good car thing, but oh, well. Mm-hmm. So we get to Ben Saturday night. And, you know, here's the thing we found when we come to the lovely mountain town of Bend, where people are – talk about easy breezy summer, you know, fun. It's all happening here. People take their recreation very seriously mm-hmm. in Bend. There's water sports and kayaking and hiking and yoga and CrossFit. And there was a big bicycle race in town Saturday night. There was a huge lacrosse tournament. It was packed here. You know, and it's just – you can just put on – your river shoes and your fleece and you're good. Uh-huh. No, you don't have to
dress.
It's
a good look. It's nice and comfy, Leon.
You know, it is.
That's shorts, river shoes, fleece. There you go.
It's just, it's like
a little camp uniform.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And so, but I always have to, it takes us about 36 hours to decompress from our big city ways. And you know, just who we are. So like Saturday night, we ended up going out to dinner and Colin, my 17-year-old, we had gotten him up at 5 a.m. to hit the road. So he was like, I'm just going to lie down. And he slept for 15 straight hours. So he was not.
Way to go. That is really that's a classic teenage move.
I know. Okay, good. Just boom out like, oh, the drive he didn't even do. That was exhausting for him. But so Barrick and I went out to dinner and I just, you know, Julie, part of the trade-off for small town charm is really bad service, you know?
Okay. I heard you started off by saying small time, Leon. Okay.
Small town charm equals really bad service. And I know it's an issue with me that we go to these restaurants and things that should be moving along at a pace, never move along at a pace. Mm-hmm. So we went out to a restaurant and the food is fine. It's just the delivery of the food and the drinks and the check. It just all comes in a haphazard fashion.
Aggravated, Leon. You're totally aggravated.
Your
fleece and your river shoes relaxing.
I couldn't do it.
Kicking back. You couldn't do it.
I couldn't let go. And one of the other issues was this restaurant. It was kind of chilly, actually, Saturday night. We got in town. It was only 60 degrees. And they had the air conditioning on full blast in this restaurant. But I seemed to be like caught in the polar vortex. So there was just like wind coming at me the whole meal. And I kept like switching seats to get out of the jet stream. It just wasn't working.
Ooh, it sounds like a lovely, relaxing evening.
You know what? At least I know that I had to just, at one point, like the check was taking forever. And I said, okay, I'm just going to go outside. I think it's best if I leave.
It's the same as a 2-year-old. If you start acting up in a restaurant, you have to go outside. That's it. Okay.
You know, here's the thing, like slower service doesn't really equate to better service. You know what I mean? What you get is slow, bad service. You don't get... It's not a question of just slowing down and relaxing. It's slow and it's bad. And that's the part that I like. You just have to readjust. Like in the grocery store, they just work at a different pace than I'm used to. And
You're used to just whizzing around, like, you know, and just bagging and checking in a very efficient manner.
Boom, boom, boom. Right. It's just they're, you know, they're working, but it's just at a...
Leon... So how it now you're several days into the vacation. Is it going any better?
I'm proud of me, Julie. I went to get a cup of coffee today. And even though it was unbelievably slow service and there were locals just standing in front of the coffee counter talking they had their coffee.
It's small town. They're visiting, Leon. That's a nice thing, right?
And at one point, one of them said, oh, do you want a coffee mug? I was like, no, I want coffee. I didn't say that, Julie. I managed to say, I just wanted to order some coffee because on many establishments now, they have these stickers on the outside that say, be nice, you're in Oregon now, which I find to be very aggressive language, right?
It's for all you Californians, right? But they don't like you at all, do they? And the ones from LA are worse than the ones from San Francisco, aren't they? Isn't that the general consensus?
I don't know. All I'm saying is I did not say that. Fine, stand in front of this working establishment just chatting. While I stand here, I held my tongue. So I'm proud of me. And I sit with my husband, too, because the first day he was up at 4 a.m. He worked for a couple of hours. And then I heard him rattling around upstairs. And I said, what are you doing up there? He goes, oh, I'm just reorganizing Liz's closets.
It's just some home improvement projects?
Yes. He's doing it, man. He's
sort of a free ranger. I'm sure there could be other closets that he could tackle. That's
Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life. Aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the Mega Moisture Duo. Yes. You can literally see your skin get firmer, and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz. A youthful yeah. glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria Seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea. Liz, you know we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do. Because there are just so many fun things to frame, Leanne, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing to get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah. Any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leanne, they have already frame-bridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift-giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but Framebridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
But you're going to be happy, okay? Yeah. That's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit FrameBridge.com or see a local FrameBridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's FrameBridge.com. Thanks, FrameBridge.
He enjoys efficiency, and so he is setting up some efficiencies there. I mean, okay. You know, good. There was a lot of just dump and runs in the closet. I mean, there was Christmas ornaments mixed in with – Liz has like 100 record albums. There's like Satellite Sisters paraphernalia. Ooh. I uncovered this beautiful antique clock that was in there that was Mom's. It was like all – and then it was just – Barrick just rearranged the closets. So
okay, that's good.
That
that's
made
good.
Him happy. But now we're settling down. We're vacationing.
Good.
We're vacationing.
Good. I think you should just eat in, Leanne. I don't think you should eat out.
No, that's what I did Sunday night. I said, Let's just not – I can't go out yet. I can't – can't go out again. I think it's better if I just eat in.
Yeah. So, because you can serve yourself at the pace that you like.
Yes.
That's good.
Oh, okay. Are we going?
Well, Lisa, I want to congratulate you, and I think you should rest up because your dream has come true, hasn't it?
It has.
Los Angeles, 2024, right?
It's not official, but yesterday the city of Boston bowed out of its Olympic bid. And I think that's the kind way of saying it. So let's just leave it at that because I know we have many Bostonians who mm-hmm. listen to the show. And, you know, they had a lot of mixed feelings, as did apparently everyone in Boston, about hosting the Olympics. They managed to win the 2024 bid a couple of years ago, but it was clear that public support was not on the side of the, you know, Boston Olympic bid. And so the USOC said, listen, why don't we just find another city? And of course, the city poised to take over is the City of Angels, Los Angeles, California. So we are happy. We are happy to step in Beantown. Don't worry. This is...
You just... Leanne, I mean, I just want to know, were you on that committee that was trying to get rid of the Olympics in Boston? Were you
no, I think it was all Bostonians. Believe me. I think it was the mayor of Boston that said, I can't make my city foot this bill. I can't do this to the people. There was no public support. So, you know what? Boston is a small, congested city. And I don't say it's just – and we are primed. We're a big-time city in terms of we got freeways. We got stadiums. We have a lot of major universities. You know, we are hosting this week the 70,000 athletes and coaches for the Special Olympics,
which
has been such a joy to have in the city. And, you know, I
fun to watch. Yes,
it's fun to watch. Every municipality was hosting athletes, providing training, welcomes, parades for the athletes. You know, it's just a very supportive effort. And I think that will make a big impression on the USOC. We're ready to go. Like I suggested or maybe forced my son to look up the Special Olympics in like January. I thought you should volunteer for that. That would be a good summer job. Done. Like the volunteers, they were not even accepting applications as of January. They had filled 30,000 volunteer slots, 30,000 volunteer slots. And so, you know, people here are enthastic. It's just a big community and we're poised.
Because you don't have an NFL team.
We don't. We don't.
You might as well host the Olympics.
And we got stadiums galore. We got freeways. We got plenty of stuff. So we are happy to have the Olympics. Okay. Should that come to pass, it would be great. 2014. Love to have them. So don't worry, Boston. We totally got you covered. Totally.
I was looking forward to another trip to the Cape, Leanne. So I'm a little sorry about that. I'll have to think of another reason to get out there. But I know that the Bostonians were worried about too much traffic. But, you know, in LA, you don't care. You already have too much traffic.
Yeah, we don't care. Yeah.
You don't care. Okay, that's good.
And, you know,
that's
my
good.
Husband
the weather's
was...
good. It's an international city, as is Boston, you know, and I think it will be fun. You've got all kinds of – you can produce the big shows.
We can. There's
no
doubt
about it.
We're poised. We're totally poised. And people said during 84, I wasn't here for that Olympics, but my husband was. Like there was – you could have like danced on the freeways because they issued such alarming traffic alerts that there was no one on the freeways. People took those 2 weeks off. You know, they really accommodated the games. And those were like amongst the last modern games to actually make money. I mean, you know, they were well run by Peter Ueberroth, and they put in Olympic training facilities all over Southern California with the profits from those games. So, we're ready.
Throw your hat in there. Get there early. Okay. Outstanding booster.
I'm totally going to do that. Like, I took like ambassador. I want to stand out in front of somewhere, you know, with my t-shirt on. Yeah, I'll be ready.
Even if it's in front of your house, you just go right ahead and do it, Leanne.
I'm going to start now. I'm going to start now before we even get the official bid. I'm just going to set up a booth in front of the Rose Bowl.
Just get yourself a sawhorse, put it out in the front lawn, and just and go for it. You need a little snappy hat to go with it, too, Okay.
We'll get a hat. Again, I was at the Barcelona games. I got a hat with all those pins. I still got it. I'm going to put my pins on.
You're ready, Leanne. You're ready.
I'm ready. Okay. Totally ready.
Well, I have another story that I want to bring to you, Leanne, because you've been doing all the robotic coverage here at Satellite Sisters. And big headlines today that Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking, along with other many concerned scientists, have put out a warning that they are very concerned about military artificial intelligence arms race that could develop as a result of all the robotics that are now available. They made a statement that said it's virtually inevitable that this is going to happen, and that robotics and artificial intelligence, this, in their minds, they see this as the third revolution in warfare behind gunpowder and nuclear arms.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, that it's even more alarming because they say it's feasible in years, not decades. So, and this sort of, I had just seen another editorial written by Jerry Kaplan, who's coming out with a book about, is it possible to create an ethical robot? That it sort of starts with the driverless car, Leanne. And he poses a question. He said, how are you going to feel, Leanne, or perhaps your race car driving husband, how is he going to feel when he is passed or cut off by a self-driving car?
Oh, I can assure you, I know how he's going to feel. It's not going to be good, because when anyone passes him, he takes it upon himself to pass back. I mean, he doesn't. So, and we're in a 1985 totally white minivan, so, or 1999 white minivan. He still gets mad.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, he was giving the example, it starts with the driverless car, that there aren't any ground rules. I mean, what about situations like in many communities, they have like 2-hour parking in the downtown area. That's so, there's a constant flow of parking spots for consumers as they come. But what if you had a self-driving car, Leanne, that could be programmed to move out of a 2-hour parking spot into another 2-hour parking spot every 2 hours? That way you could drive to work and use the 2-hour parking spots for 8 hours a day. You see?
I'm getting stressed just listening to this. It sounds terrible.
I know. So
I think it's a terrible idea anyway. I think it's I don't think the driverless car is a good idea. I don't understand. I know
that there's, everyone is excited about robotics, about artificial intelligence. But as these scientists, they're thinking about the applications in the military sense, there are no rules. So what are going to be safeguards for, what they're calling, what the headlines are calling killer robots?
It's like even the drones now, when you see those flying in and getting in the way of, aircraft trying to put out fires, that's bad. Yeah. That's not a good use of drones. Yeah. No, I agree. And believe me, Julie, I saw the future of robotics at the World's Championships in Los Angeles. They're from all over the world. And some of those kids are going to turn evil. I know it. Okay. I'm guessing it's the kids who wore the trench coats all week. That was creepy.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
That was creepy.
This podcast has taken a dark and stormy turn as well. Okay. Well, you heard it here first at Satellite Sisters. We're usually on, the cutting edge of most technology. And so, all right.
So you're going to keep an eye on robots.
I am going to keep
robots.
An eye on this. I mean, I think it's a big story, and I think it will be a big issue for, this generation. And, for this generation, not even for the next generation, we have to work on this. Okay.
Yeah. When someone like Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk weigh in and they're concerned, then I'm concerned. Like those are two, Those are voices that you
I know. And it's big thinkers, big thinkers from Google and many other high tech companies, that are working on this and want to use it in a positive way. But, it definitely has military applications.
Okay, Jewel. Now I'm nervous. Okay. All right. Okay.
Well, let's turn to a happier topic. Okay. Let's turn to our Facebook page. Okay.
Because there are a couple of good discussions that popped up at the Facebook group this week that I thought we could discuss. And now I seem to be having problems with my bringing that up on Facebook. So I'm just going to talk about it, and hopefully sometimes the Wi-Fi here is a little out. But we had one question was from Tara in New York. She wanted to know about tipping at summer camp. Like her son went to a summer camp, and then she was told, oh, you have to tip the counselors. And she's like, you know, I'm a single mom. The camp was expensive enough. Do I really have to tip? And I was surprised there were answers all over the board, because I have never heard of tipping a counselor at a summer camp, you know, especially a week camp or something. I mean, camp is expensive enough. Maybe you give them some cookies or a thank you card or a Starbucks gift card. But I was surprised that people were like, no, no, it should be this much a day. And people had real, real responses. Did you get tipped at Nana Camp?
Not yet. I'm holding out for a tip. I think it's totally appropriate, Leon, having been head counselor. No, I think it's a real issue. I was surprised. I mean, I think it's like anything, you know, if children have had a good time, sometimes parents just want to be appreciative of the counselors that help them. But in other cases, there's the expectation that not only do you have to pay all the camp fees, but you better set aside some money for a tip afterwards. And that does seem a little shocking to me.
So. Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on what kind of camp it is, but I went away to 8-week summer camp. Nobody ever tipped those counselors, I don't think. And we had parents weigh in on the board that, like Ann said, her 15-year-old is a junior counselor and she isn't getting any tips. You know, she makes minimum wage, but that seems like a fortune to her. She's young. I mean, I know camp counselors don't get a lot, but it seems like either your camp has a tradition of allowing you to accept tips or not. Like Sarah said, she worked at a summer camp in Maine, and it was drilled into their heads that they were not allowed to accept money or gifts or anything. So this seems like one of those parenting things that has gotten like more competitive and like the tipping, and because I have never heard of that. So.
But it's very common now, and as our sister Sheila can attest, that, you know, teacher gifts, you know, that, you know, she enjoys them, teachers enjoy them, and that's kind of ramped up because, you know, I guess I got some scented candles for my son's teachers, you know, but that seems like it's, you know, like everything, it's a lot more competitive, and that's a shame because you would hate to have kids miss out on the opportunity to go to camp because then, you know, the tip puts it in a price point.
Right.
A price point that you just can't afford. And let's face it, a lot of people use camp. I did, you know, as part of, you know, your summer child care, if you're a working parent, this is, you know, this is part of your child care arrangement for the summer. So that's a big expense.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Summers are always wildly expensive. They're incredibly expensive if you're a working parent. And so then to add on a whole bunch of random tips, I thought good advice from Betty. She said, check with your child's camp if you're not sure what the norm is there. Because I'm sure, you know, that's a good – bake some cookies and check with your child's camp is what I would say. Okay, and then we had a really sweet discussion. One of our satellite sisters out there is anticipating the empty nest. Her oldest son will be a senior in high school. And she said she's already just counting the hours till he goes away. And she's really, really sad about it. And could anybody give her some advice? And people really stepped up with really nice things to say, that it's hard at first, but then you get used to it. Make every moment count his senior year. Take a vacation before you go and build some family memories. You know, all I can say is this. I would love to have an empty nest. I couldn't even
You haven't had the empty nest.
I am waiting for him to leave my nest.
He hasn't.
Did not.
The little birdie has not left.
I, I was
likes
so...
to stay close to home. You know, he wants to watch TV with you, eat those home cooked meals. Yeah,
I so want my nest to be at least half empty. Yeah. So, no, as my older son ended up taking a gap year, living at home, and then going to a college nearby that has no dorms. So it's just now that he's looking at apartments with his friends and moving out, and I'm like, I cannot wait. So I can't really speak to like how to get through it because I'm just begging to be part of that. But I will say this, you know, their senior year in high school, it's a year of a lot of changes. Wouldn't mm-hmm. you say, Julie, that
yes.
for you and for your child, and it can be a year of tremendous stress. You can let the college process just completely overwhelm you. And there is something to just kind of trying to enjoy that last year when they're in your home.
I agree with that. Without a doubt, I think the empty nest, experiencing that was one of the biggest life changes I've ever been through. And it was unexpected to me what a dramatic change it was. And so I think it's really good that you're thinking about it in advance and, you know, planning for it and really savoring these last moments. I mean, the child is going to come home. Believe me, they'll come back.
Right.
They'll come back. But it is a very dramatic change in a lifestyle for a lot of parents, you know, where you are just 24/7. You know, my husband and I were like, well, we don't have to be home at, you know, like for dinner, you know, that is just, it's such a big change, in, you know, how you operate, your household that it does take some adjustment, but it can be, it's a great time in life too, as well. So, I think all that advice was really helpful.
Right. Yeah. People said, you know, take a yoga class, reconnect with your girlfriends, cultivate yeah. some activities, be a tourist in your own town. And be grateful that you've raised somebody that's healthy and enough and happy enough to head to college on his own, that's fantastic too. And you know all those things, but, you know, it kind of starts with the beginning of their senior year. All those lasts, they actually get kind of emotional. And so you get to the week of graduation and then you're just crying at the drop of a hat.
Yes,
over
it. Of course.
And then they turn on you the summer before they go to college. So.
It is that pushing away. Yes. Like so. As you're trying, you know, you both want the same thing by the end of summer, after senior year, that without a doubt. Well, Leanne, this dovetails very nicely into a piece I saw written by a writer from The Simpsons, Leon.
Okay.
And the name of this, Rob Lezepnik, I'm going to say his name wrong, but The Adults We Failed to Raise was the name of the article. And I see this kind of as the revenge of the TV show The Simpsons. Because Rob apparently has a college grad that has returned home. Okay. And it has dawned on him and many of his friends, probably associated with The Simpsons, who watched The Simpsons, who knows, but that all those years, he writes, that all those years of being your kid's concierge has created a monster. And I just love the term concierge.
That is funny.
A lot of parents, that's exactly what, you know, what we became, you know, when we were raising kids, we wanted to be very involved with our children and we would do anything, make anything happen for the child, you know, that we, as Rob writes, we staged managed their lives, right? This can be true. And so as a result of that, when they return from college with no idea what they want to do and they move back into their bedroom, they have no life skills and they have no ability to make their own decisions. And so Rob is really urging parents, you know, who have children or young adults in this category, that you need to cut the cord. You really need, this is where everybody has to buck up and you have to cut the cord. And the first thing that Rob recommends is that you take them off your Netflix account.
Oh.
This is going to be so harsh and so confusing and upsetting to them.
It's so true.
That it's going to send a clear message. Mm-hmm. Second major point as part of his program to launch these adults is that you really need to channel Angela Merkel, that you just have to cut these kids off. Like, and you have to start charging them if they're using their ATMs, not at their banks, but at, you know, at the, oh, at the yeah. convenience store, right? You have to present them with a bill. Okay. Now he goes on, he says that you should try to have them read some books now, and he's not suggesting that, you know, anything too difficult. But his main book that he is leaving around his household is Coach Wooden's Pyramid of Success.
Oh yeah. That's a good one.
Coach
Classic.
Wooden, he is the UCLA, you know, a coach, basketball coach that won, I don't even know how many national championships.
Yeah, but he said like 12 in a row. He won like 14 overall. Legendary coach.
Yes. Okay. So that's the book, Leon. This is what you need. You might want to buy a copy, Leon. Just, you know, leave it out and about. Not that your sons aren't launched. And then now, as part of the decision-making process, you need to start small with some outings. Have them go to the grocery store and actually buy food and not call you to find out what they like on their turkey wrap. Is it mayo or mustard? And whatever they come home with, that's what you eat. Okay. It's just these are small baby steps that you can take with their kids to get them ready for what is ultimately the big thing, is they have to find a job. And this, you know, he just throws his hands up. You have to beg and plead with your friends. Okay. That's the only way, right? That's the only way your kid's going to get a job. Okay. So anyway, it's called The Adults We Failed to Raise. It's funny.
Where is it, Julie?
It was in the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, okay.
Okay. The Wall Street Journal had it, and it's funny. Yeah. But it really spot on in many, many cases. And you know, there may be some tips that you can incorporate in your own lifestyle. That's
you know, we did leave my older son home alone for this 10-day trip because he's in school this summer. He's still at college, taking a full term. And so my goal last week, the younger son kept saying, why is there no food in the house? I go, my goal is to leave the least amount of food humanly possible for our older son so that he has to fend for himself.
Okay, Lane. Good. This is exactly what he's talking
yeah.
about.
Like at one point the day before we left, I was starting to like mop the floor. I'm like, what am I doing? It's for him. It's for Brooks. I'm not going to clean the house for him.
Right.
He can live in his own filth. And then I said, but it better be clean for us when we walk through the door. I don't want to ask too many questions about what happened here when we're gone, but you got to do that. And you got to feed the cat. Is that... The cat. Okay. The two cats.
Your cats. I know, Leon.
I can't. I know. We don't know. Maybe that other one will leave. I mean, it just surfaced the night before we left on vacation. We heard some meowing in the garage from underneath a blanket. And it was a different cat. It was a different cat. So
I think in the cat world, there's like a big neon sign over your house that says, sucker. That's what I think, Leon.
I know. And I do have to go back and do that trap, neuter, release thing. I understand that, people. I know I have to do that. I have a friend up the street who does cat rescue. She's going to help me.
So. Okay. It's a whole new lifestyle.
I did like the person on the Facebook page that said, I think it's time. Get another dog. And that. Okay. All right. Sorry. Didn't mean to digress.
No,
into
anyway,
my cat.
But okay. So there's some helpful tips in there.
Yeah.
So you might want to check it out. It's called The Adults We Failed to Raise. But I just love the term that, you know, we've become our kids' concierge. And that is so true. So, Leon, I have one pick for you this week on Tuesday. You know, I do some picks and pans on Tuesday, but no pans for the rest of the summer. We'll take those back up after Labor Day. But I want to put a heads up for a video pick. This is a series of short videos that it was created and written, and it looks like mainly produced by the son. His name is Ryder Doyle. He's an actor in New York, and he is the son of some of our oldest and dearest friends from New Orleans. And I think you'll enjoy it. It's adult material. It's not for kids necessarily, but it's really cute and clever and well done. And Ryder Doyle apparently has some star-studded friends that he was able to corral to do these pieces. So you'll be surprised that I was delighted to see that Carrie Mulligan, the actress, is in this. Zoe Kazan is in this. So just check it out. What's called The Walker.
The Walker.
It's at refinery29.com.
I put the link up on our
Facebook page, so you can check that out. And it's very, you know, it's really fun when you see kids that you knew when they were little. I mean, Ryder used to be on my husband's baseball team, Little League team, and Ryder played first base, but mainly he sat on first base. I mean, he just really didn't like connect with baseball in any kind of way at all. But he was out there every day and just sitting on first base, and you just kind of had to work with that, you know. And but he has certainly found his calling as an actor, this is a very cute piece that I think has, you know, could go somewhere. It could be a TV series or something like that. But
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling and chilling there with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, yeah, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. Butcher Box gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free-for-year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox. Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz, my hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So, PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROSE is spelled PROSE. PROSE.com/sisters. Thanks, PROSE.
Check oh, yeah. It's getting a big, I see it. The Walker. Oh, yeah. It looks great.
Yeah. It's very,
you're in
very
Refinery cool. 29, right? Click on video.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That
and
looks
they're smart,
good.
And they're fun. And you should check it out. Yeah. It's good.
All right. So. Good tip, Jewel.
All right. All right.
All right. Coming up, we are going to go to Pole, Dark and Handsome, and then we're going to get our vacation on. So we're going to take a quick break, and then when we return, we're going to do our recap of episode 7 of Pole, Dark. Stay with us. We're the Satellite Sisters. We are the Satellite Sisters. I'm Leanne Dolan here with my sister Julie Dolan, and this is our weekly recap of the PBS Masterpiece series, Pole Dark. It is episode 7 we're taking a look at this week, 1 week before the big season finale. And Julie, all I have to say is there's a ball happening this week, right? Those are always magic words when it comes to a Masterpiece series. When you hear there's a ball, that you know.
It's excitement in the air, Leanne. I mean, I think every TV series should have a ball, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, if just you could, I mean, Law and Order, they could work in like a policeman's ball or something like that, don't you think?
It's so true, Julie. I hadn't really thought about that, but almost every show can be approved by throwing a ball.
Yeah.
Except, of course, that this was like the worst ball of all time.
Worst.
It was a terrible ball.
There wasn't one good thing about it, Leanne.
This whole episode was rather dark and stormy, as you said, obviously setting up a lot of storylines, leaving us with a lot of questions to be answered in next week's season finale of Pole Dark. So, in general, it wasn't the most uplifting or romantic, but don't fret because there was one scene of Ross in bed in his linen shirt with his chest hair, right?
I thought you were talking about the shirt burning scene, Leanne.
Oh,
I thought
yeah.
For sure you were going with that scene. But we'll get to that. But you're right, Leanne. Nothing good happened in Cornwall this week. Nothing.
No.
It was all dark and dreary. I found myself looking out at the sea, Leanne, during this episode.
Okay. So it opens with Cousin Francis, who's now lost his estate and lost his coal mine gambling episode, in a card game. And Francis is out there doing a poor, poor imitation of scything.
Just the worst. He's wimpy. He's prissy. He's snobby and weak, Leanne. It's a bad combination. And he still has his shirt on, which is a good thing with the scything. But I have to say, Elizabeth, I think, looked even better in her field dress and her basket of vegetables, don't you think?
I mean, can you believe that? I have Liz the milkmaid. Like, just unbelievable. I mean, she just looked beautiful out of her fancy lady dress and
yes.
carrying that basket of what? What was she doing with that? Where was she going with those vegetables? Where had she come from? Okay.
Someone had handed those vegetables to her.
Yeah.
I don't think those delicate hands of hers actually picked the vegetables.
No. And we know Francis's delicate hands have never really held a scythe because he was complaining about the blisters. Like, if he's not bitter and unpleasant enough, then to whine about your blisters when you gamble away your family estate in a card game, that's really poor form. But, Ross came galloping in, and there was that one long lingering look, Julie, between Ross and Liz the milkmaid, wasn't there?
There is something there.
Yeah.
You cannot deny it. They can't deny it, Leanne. That's the problem, I think.
Yeah. So we have this scene that sets up, oh my gosh, Francis might actually have to be doing some field work while Ross is off to the first coal auction. There was a lot of coal and a lot of card playing in this.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of which I think are very good television, but...
Well, I thought the card game was a little better. The coal auction, if you are planning to create a TV show, just skip it. Okay.
Right.
It was boring. It was pretty boring. There were some side glances, but things are in the works that Ross is trying to you know, they're trying to sort of reshape the coal industry and take over the smelting operation.
Yeah. And if,
that's about it. That's all I can say about it.
Right. Ooh, monopoly. You know, there was a monopoly and now there's going to be no more monopoly in the coal business in Cornwall. I think we can move on, Julie. You're absolutely right. And let's move on to the haughty actress who married the dumb guy, Mark, who can't read or do nothing. And in the meantime, the actress is really, you know, she wants to rise above her station and she's got her eye on Dr. Feelgood, doesn't she, Jill?
She has the roving eye and the heaving bosoms, Leon. I mean, that she's just, she is doing, she's throwing herself at the doctor. She like cut her hand so that she could spend time with him.
I have never seen bosoms heave like that, Julie. Like from a, she was laid out flat and yet her bosoms were upright and heaving like on their own. Like they had
tried to reenact that in my bedroom. I had no such luck. Okay.
It's spectacular. So, and I think the good doctor is paying attention now because, well, she kept showing up at his cottage like 20 times during the episode. So it seemed to me the front of this episode was a little obvious. Some of the scenes were a little obvious. Like, you know, this episode in general, I don't think was that successful. But then we go to, speaking of obvious, Captain Blamey, Verity's would-be lover, the sea captain who is married to the sea, but he wants to be with Verity. And the two of them are secretly meeting in town. Gossips are talking about it. But Julie, all they talk about is freaking sailing.
I know. I don't trust the
I don't
sea
either.
Captain. That hair, but when he's not wearing his sea captain wig, his hair is very untrustworthy. I just think it's doomed, which is too bad because, you know, Verity is such, she is a loyal family member and she's been a loyal friend to Demelza. And you just know nothing good's going to happen for her. So.
Right. Yeah, I don't trust him either. I have that do not trust him. And he just wears bad outfits, don't you think?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
He's not, the figure of his jib is not cut well, or whatever that expression is. I like the cut of his jib. I don't like the cut of his jib. It's all bad.
It's really the cut of his pants. There's something
it is
really wrong with this pants.
There's heaving happening. And that's not a good place for heaving.
No.
Okay. All right. So, and speaking of that, whoo, Demelza is playing the piano when Poldark shows up. And
what's up with that, Leanne? What's up with that?
She plays the piano?
Yes. When did she learn how to play the piano?
She's got nothing else to do there.
I know, Leanne, but it does, I think it portends for something that she's going to get, you know, she likes the fancy life. She doesn't want to go back to being a scullery maid. And that's hard to reconcile with Ross, who has, you know, he is a man of the people.
Yeah.
And I think he doesn't want to just be, you know, with the upper class. And she's trying to take on many of the activities of the upper class.
Yes. I mean, that was a big theme this week. Ross sort of being the man of the people. And in the meanwhile, Demelza looking forward to her first ball, her formal entry to society, playing the piano. She got a smoking new dress that showed up. And, you know, she's learning to dance and make small talk and all these things. So, right. The two of them are sort of going in opposite directions. And then they have that face off at the world's worst ball. We'll talk about it in a second. So then we go back to the storyline of Jeannie, the kitchen maid, and Jim, who we saw go to prison in episode 2 or 3 for, you know, poaching at night. And Ross defended him to no avail, and he got 2 years in prison. And we learn that things in prison are bad.
Bad?
There's no surprise.
Bad. That was the worst prison. I mean, it was like something out of Dickens, Leon, that prison. That was really bad.
It was. It really was. So there will be a prison breakout shortly, but not before we see Poldark in bed, just awash in linen. And Demelza asks him, what keeps you up at night? And he says, smelting. And I know.
You have that same feeling, don't you, Leon?
I do. Smelting keeps me up at night too, Ross. So, I mean, So again, we see a lot of obvious scenes, like Ross has a lot of it in his mind. He's got the weight of the world on his shoulders. He's concerned about his people. And he hears about the decaying conditions in a local prison where Jim is. The fever has come to the prison, and that's going to be a disaster. So, Julie, we're a third of the way into this episode when they finally get galloping. I mean, it took them a while to get galloping this time.
I told you, nothing good is happening in Cornwall this week.
So he grabs his friend, Dr. Feelgood, and they gallop off to the prison. And unlike the Outlander Scots, who use like a big tree log and some sheep to break into their prison.
They did have a plan, Liam. They did have a plan.
So Paul,
I think it's the same set, though. The prison is the same set.
It is. So Paul Dark and Dr. Feelgood talk their way into this prison with fake papers. There's some rustling of papers, and they have to get Typhoid Jim out of the prison, and only discover that Typhoid Jim, it's even worse than you could possibly imagine, because he's also gangrene Jim. And Julie, it was at that point when I was like, please do not show Jim's arm, right?
Well, it was, I think it was some nice 1700 medicine there with the whiskey shots and the amputation. But I don't think that amputation was going to hurt that arm because it looks so gross to begin with.
Yeah.
It was dead. That arm was dead.
Yeah.
So sadly, he didn't make it. That it was just, you know, he was too far gone with fever and disease to survive.
And this plunges Paul Dark into 5 days of darkness and drunkenness, basically.
Right.
But
he had a shirt burning first, Liam.
That's true. Oh, Julie, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go. Yes,
no,
mention
just,
the shirt.
I just enjoyed the shirt burning, Liam. I mean, I just think that it's a good practice. I think we should see more of that. And it was set on the beach. It was lovely. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I hope that's a trend. But not before we hear Elizabeth back at the Grimm Manor there.
Yeah.
We have Elizabeth. She gives us her prescription for happiness vis-a-vis 18th century women. And it's this: lower your expectations. So post Jim, we see just a complete decline in Ross. And most dramatically, he doesn't want to go to the ball, Julie.
Right. Right.
Because he feels like he can't be amongst the upper class now. These are the people that sent young Jim to prison in the first place, including the very magistrate that did it. And he can't be amongst them. And there is a lot of disappointment on Demelza's face because she's got a new ball gown that Poldark has ordered for her. And she just wants to see the ball gown.
She wants to see the ball gown. She wants to. She's been practicing her dance steps. She's been planning on this, land. So, yeah.
And so,
but you understand Ross's position. I mean, these are the horrible people that are sentencing these working class people to these prisons, and the prisons are, they're substandard. They're inhuman. So,
yes, but I understand Ross's position. I did not understand the argument when Verity comes bursting in, like, you must go to the ball because that's how you're going to save yourself from going to prison. You know, you have to show all these people that you can't stand that you're really one of them so that they won't actually throw you in prison for breaking into a prison and breaking out a prisoner. That seemed like a lot of circular logic, especially.
Well, it's just because you and I are not members of the upper class. I think if we were, Leon, that would make perfect sense to us, that you can only talk to upper class people at all times. That's pretty much her argument.
So
you just have to stay in the upper class.
So they go to the ball, and it's clear that Ross just wants to drink heavily and that things are not, it's just a powder keg. The whole ball is a powder keg. They use that word, and that is what's exactly happening. Like, everybody who could be, blow up is going to blow up. Francis might blow up. Captain Blamey might blow up. Ross might blow up.
Elizabeth might, something might, she might go too.
Something might blow. You know what also might blow are those powdered wigs. Those are not sexy on men.
They aren't. Ross had like wild man hair when he showed up at the ball, which was in stark contrast to all the rest in the powdered wigs. But I much prefer the wild man hair to the powdered wig any day.
It does make you wonder, like, how did men get talked into those? Like, was the rationale behind putting those like highly styled stupid powder wigs. And I know that they still wear them in British courts and they're still stupid, I believe. It's like, it doesn't make any sense putting those wigs on, but all right. So the things go south in the ball very quickly. First of all, Ross is drawn into a game of cards because, you know, why not do that? Why? Let's go gamble your life away as you've seen your cousin do and just
That's
leave your...
exactly what I thought was going to happen, Leon.
Yes. Yeah. And then the captain shows up, even though Verity's asked him not to because she hasn't spoken to Francis yet, because Francis continues to make disparaging remarks about marrying beneath her. And there's the captain, again, looking creepy, you know?
He does. Looking... It was so, his face looked wrong. Yeah. And then again, unfortunate pants.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what was going on there. And he just was charging around. He was just not in the right place at all.
No, Elizabeth's mother finally returns. She's a good character. I wish we had seen more of her. She sort of disappeared for a couple of episodes, like they forgot to write her in. So there she is, the snobby mother. And she's like, oh, who's that beautiful young girl in the gold gown and the dramatic necklace? And it was Demelza. And she was like, oh, the scullery maid? Like, okay. Yeah. But it was good to have her back.
Chris Kardashian all over, don't you think? That's what I put in my notes. Yeah, because again, she's still scheming. Here she schemed the whole marriage between Elizabeth and Francis, and she's looking around, just, you know, and she's lamenting the fact that Elizabeth could have done better, you know, rather than to be, you know, hooked up with the Poldarks, you know?
So. Yeah. And then we have George the banker, who's, you know, definitely making the moves on Elizabeth.
Oh,
George, the evil banker, who's supposed to be Francis's good friend, clearly stating his intentions to Elizabeth that, like, he is available.
Yeah.
And then Francis meets Blamey, the sea captain, and makes this just pathetic lunge at him, like he's going to knock him over.
Yeah.
What was that?
I know. That was bad, Leon. He's just so weak. He can't even have a good fist fight during a ball.
That's true. You're right, Julie. He is so weak. What happened to a good fist fight during a brawl? Mm-hmm. A ball. Can't do it. But most of the action takes place in the card room where we see Ross getting drunker and drunker and apparently losing more and more.
Liberace. That's what I call that guy. I don't know what he is.
Right. This is supposed to be George the banker's good friend, the one who swindled Francis out of his estate in coal mine. Mm-hmm. And now he's sort of taking it to Ross. And we see Ross lose a grandfather watch. Then we see there's a tense scene where he's about to lose Demelza's necklace. Previous to that, he and Demelza have it out. That was the most interesting scene to me. The two of them fighting at the ball. He's saying these people are all hypocrites. They don't know anything. They can't relate. They're ignorant. And Demelza's saying, hey, you know what? Where I'm from, people are also ignorant. I like that.
I know. She's not going back to the scullery.
No.
That's if there's such a place. I'm not sure.
So we have the big fight, and yet they go back into the card room. And as it turns out, Liberace is a cheater, cheater, cheater.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that Ross nabs him actually holding a card in his hand, trying to hide it. It seemed like a very lame attempt at cheating. Like, I can't believe no one had noticed that before when they revealed, right? It's like this crumpled up, like, sweaty card.
It's like 1700, okay? They weren't as
savvy. They didn't have YouTube?
It's like poker on ESPN, okay. Or, you know, I did just.
Ross calls him out and, like, oh, now all the storylines are set up for the big finale, because it's clear, like, wow, this guy cheated Francis out of his estate and his coal mine. You know, he's a cousin of George the banker. So George the banker may have to call out Ross in a duel to defend his family honor. You know, we have, will Ross go to prison? Like, his, you know, it was seen as poor form what Ross did, and being drunk for 5 days, not good. And so the magistrates may conspire against him and send him to prison. And then
we certainly have the issue of Demelza not being totally honest with Ross regarding the sea captain and Verity. And that on two occasions, she had the opportunity to say to Ross, hey, look, you know, I helped arrange their meeting again, and she didn't say anything.
She did not say it. Yeah.
I think this is going to, we are going to see this in the final episode, Lane.
Okay. Yes. Well, yes. And we have the Copper Works, you know, we have the Monopoly who previously held all the smelting. We'll just leave it at that. The smelting monopoly is going to turn on the shareholders of Ross's Copper Works. So there's a lot of things that may happen that are set up to happen in the finale next week. But certainly the best line of the show, and this was singled out by several Satellite Sisters on our Facebook page, was at one point, you know, Francis is in the room with Verity, Elizabeth, and who is that? Aunt Agnes? What's her name?
Yeah,
it's Agnes,
yeah,
right?
I don't know. Let's just call her Dowager Agnes.
Dowager Agnes. And, you know, Frances says, what's wrong with the women in this family? And Dowager Agnes responds, the men. And that was good. Because the men, they failed. They failed in episode 7. They set themselves up for a lot of failure to come in the final episode. So, Julie, next week we're actually taking Tuesday off.
We are. So everyone, you're just going to have to sit tight, yeah. You know, do not Facebook the plot lines on our Facebook page, because we like to stay in a cone of silence, of innocence. So we bring you fresh impressions from the show, but we will cover the final episode. No doubt.
Yeah. This is where sort of advanced production would have helped. Like maybe we wouldn't have chosen to take our vacations this week if we knew we were building to this, but I don't know. We just thought we'd try out this series. It worked pretty well. And the next thing you know, the finale is on like the 1 week of the year that we can't do a Tuesday show. So, but don't fail. We will talk about the finale. It just won't be next Tuesday. We will get to it though. But it also gives a chance for those of you who have not watched the series, you know, it's still available on PBS. It's going to expire. So you have to kind of catch it. Yeah. I noticed that. I had to watch online at Liz's house here. So I noticed that like you have to get on board. If you want to get on board for the season finale, it's available at pbs.org, but soon it will start to expire. It's also available at Apple, at iTunes, I think. You can watch all the episodes 1 through 8. So if you want to binge watch before we do our final Poll Dark and Handsome of the season. But, you know, I just hope there's just a little more romance next week. Wouldn't you like to see just a touch more?
Yes, more galloping, more linen shirts.
More piano playing. Yeah, just a little more of that. So, I mean, I know this was supposed to be a dark episode that revealed the dark side of Ross, and that's fine. But, you know, come on, let's just step it up a little bit, PBS.
Right. Right. No more bad balls. That's it.
Okay. I know. That was not good. All right. We are the Satellite Sisters. Thank you for joining us. You can always find us at satellitesisters.com. Or join us on Facebook or on Twitter at Sat Sisters, on Instagram at Sat Sisters. We're here for you. Julie, I am going to literally be here for you on Saturday. You're showing up this weekend. We're having a little fam weekend together. Yeah, that'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. Yes, we're coming out to Bend, Oregon. So everyone's cramming in the bungalow. So it should be fun.
You know, this is funny. Susan said last night, our sister-in-law, she's planning to go hike for the family on Saturday because she said Julie and Trem want to go hiking. So,
yeah, I like to hike.
And I do not like to hike. So I was like, oh, God, a hike.
Well, it could be a walk, Leanne. You like to walk.
No. She's planned to hike, my friend. You're hiking. And I say you are hiking because I got a text from Liz today that she's ordered some more furniture and it's going to be delivered Saturday. And could I possibly like accommodate the delivery schedule? I'm like, yes, thank you. Now I don't have to go on the hike.
Okay. No hike for you, my little sister.
So you guys sound like you're going on a nice hike.
Okay. Sounds good.
I'll be here receiving furniture. And that's really what I like to do. So, all right. Thanks everybody for listening. We're the Satellite Sisters. Don't forget, call your Satellite Sister.